Yeah, it was. It was something I never really had thought about, you know, until the situation arose. You know, we got to a point where I think we had, you know, we basically had come to the end of a relationship, you know, between Lou and I suppose. I guess I tried to keep the band together because of just a pride and a belief of that I felt we still had a lot to say as a band, you know. And really, when it came down to it, it was a combination of just the band feeling, and everybody felt like, you know, very proud, as I say, of what we'd achieved, and felt that we still had some things to say. And when it actually all came down, and the reality sort of finding somebody, you know, rose, it was kind of daunting at the beginning. But we had to listen to a great deal of tapes and a lot of searching around, and basically, I just heard a tape of a band that Johnny had been in, which I didn't know at the time, which was probably a year old at that point. And I heard about three or four bars of a song he was singing, and I heard a certain thing in there, and I thought, my God. It was just one of those funny feelings. I just felt that this was it, and you know, it just connected with something in my brain, and I felt, and maybe in my soul too, you know, it just felt immediately like I pretty much knew in the space of a few seconds, basically, that I had to sort of find out who this guy was.
I was working in a band based out of Sacramento. We'd shopped a lot of tapes around to record companies, got mixed results, but we made a few contacts at record companies. And one of these guys in particular, Kenny Komisar, phoned up the manager there and found out that I was thinking about leaving the group and suggested that maybe I try out for the Foreigner gig. You know, I didn't take it serious at all at the time. It just seemed too fantastic, too far out. I'd gotten to a point where I didn't get my hopes up about things anymore. I was trying to live in a more real situation where, you know, work hard. There is. It's easy. It's easy. I see guys with fantastic dreams and wild visions that don't understand the reality of how much hard work and how long the road can be. They think it's an overnight thing. And I didn't want to let myself slip into that. And I didn't want to get my hopes up about something that I thought was probably not very likely to happen. I submitted a tape through Kenny. Mick's brother, Kevin, was sorting through all these tapes. And it took about 6 months, I think, before I heard anything back. And by that time, I had completely forgotten about it. Well, I grew up in the Midwest. I'm from Louisville originally. And I played in a lot of bar bands, cover bands, always with a hard rock edge. And we played a few Foreigner songs in those bands. And I remember listening to the first album when it came out, and I was very familiar with all the hits in the Midwest. Foreigner ruled the radio for quite a few years, as yeah. So I was very familiar with the material. I hadn't actually sung a whole lot of the songs, a couple maybe, but I knew the material quite well. I'd heard it quite a few times, and I felt like it was probably one of the influences of mine. And I respected it. I enjoyed listening to it. I worked in a situation where, after a while, it was hard for me to perceive myself writing songs that were like Foreigner. I felt like the music was a little bit sophisticated for myself because I played guitar and I was basically working in trios and smaller groups without keyboards. So at a point, I decided I'd go for a simpler, rougher, rawer edge to my own music that I was writing. And I'd kind of drifted away from Foreigner at that point. as far as a direction for myself, but I still listened to the songs and respected them. Sure. I think that's one reason. Yeah, one reason they've had such a long career. It's because they changed with the times.
I think, you know, really basically it was a question of, you know, the great thing about meeting Johnny was, as he says, it was, he was coming from a kind of a different area. I was obviously searching for a new area. I was actually, I think one thing we had in common was that we both wanted to rock, you know. That's basically all, you know, that was the sort of the thing that we understood immediately. And, you know, I guess this has been sort of a quite an adventure in this last year of getting to know each other, you know, getting to understand each other and doing all this in the period of a year without, you know, going out on the road and doing all that kind of stuff beforehand. So it's just, to me, it's like it feels, I hate to sound corny, but it does feel a bit like the first time again, you know.
Ooh.
Oh, I had to get that in, of course. But it really does feel like a new, you know, like a new band. I get the feeling now that I had in the beginning, you know.
Kind of an interesting turn of events. I moved to Los Angeles almost immediately after submitting that tape, and I reformed a band with some friends of mine from Louisville who had also drifted out there. And we almost immediately got a recording contract with Atlantic Records. So I had just finished negotiating all that and actually signed the papers when I got a call from Kenny Komisar. And he actually put me on a conference call with Bud and himself and me to talk about possibly trying out for the band. And at that point, I still felt like it was going to be an audition situation, and, you know, I'd go to a lot of trouble to see if I'd fit in, and yeah, I felt very confident about the position I was in, so I was still a bit leery of possibly screwing up the vibe that I had with my own band by trying out for Foreigner, even though I was very, very flattered that they had called. So I didn't know what to say, you know. I felt like I wasn't really available. Anyway, Bud said, well, maybe I'll just have Mick call you personally and you can talk on the phone and see if you guys hit it off. So I thought, fine, you know, there's no harm in talking. He did call, or I called him back, I think. They gave me a number at a rehearsal studio where he was trying. I called Mick at a rehearsal studio. They were trying out some other singers. And we talked, and I explained the situation, and he said, well, it's not a big pressure thing right now. He said, maybe I'll be coming out to Los Angeles soon, and we could sit down and have a drink or something and see how we hit it off. Eventually, he did that. And he came out there. I met him in a hotel, and he just decided, you know, on an impulse to see if I'd come back with him that afternoon on an airplane. I'm serious. I went down there, you know, just on a whim, thinking, you know, I'm just going to meet this guy and talk to him, and he hit me with this. And I got to thinking about it, and after we had talked, I realized, you know, that I could probably enjoy working with Mick, and the wheel started turning in my head. And I just said, why not? So we got on a plane and flew straight back to New York. We worked out a little bit in a writing situation over in Mick's apartment to see if we could collaborate, which worked out quite well. And then we went down the next day to the rehearsal studio and just ran through a few old Foreigner songs. And there's this incredible energy in the air. I was a little bit cocky, you know. I had my own band with my own deal, so I had a safety net, which gave me a bit of an edge, I think. So
That's when Johnny started to realize how quietly determined I was.
Exactly.
I think it started to sort of...
I started to realize that they seriously wanted me for this band.
We have ways, you know.
Yeah. And I realized, you know, that it was probably going to be a great situation for me. I was going to be involved in the songwriting from the beginning, and I'd have a little bit of a stake in things. You know, I believed I could sing the songs a lot better if I was involved in the writing, and there'd be a little bit of me in there. And so I felt pretty good about it, and we decided that next day we had a meeting over at Bud's office. I'll never forget it. I just said, man, let's get started, you know. It started a big paper trail of legal problems to get one thing sorted out so I could do all this. But it's worked out great, I think. Yeah.
The kidnapping of Johnny Edwards. Well, at that point, I really didn't know much. I assumed that it sounded like what he'd been doing was a band sort of situation. So I assumed, you know, that he had something to do with that. The way he was singing the songs, you know, sort of felt like that was, you know, that he was, you know, definitely involved with it. It wasn't just someone singing songs, you know. And it, you know, I didn't really know much more than that at that point. I just knew that, you know, I had something in my mind, and I just couldn't, until I'd done this deed, I wouldn't have been able to, you know, I just had to meet him. You know, I felt something, you know, it was just like it was meant to be kind of thing. And I had to take it to, you know, to the limit. And, it was, you know, kind of when we met for this famous breakfast, you know, the moment kind of we sat down, there was sort of a bit of a vibe immediately. I mean, I kind of felt sort of, I saw Johnny and I somehow looked at him. I, you know, he's a pretty straightforward guy. And I kind of felt to myself, I was right. you know, sort of, yeah, that hunch was right, you know. And from then on, I just couldn't stop, you know, that was it. And then, you know, when he came to New York, we'd been auditioning quite a number of people. And what I certainly didn't want was to sort of feel that we were, you know, trying to recreate what we'd done, let's say, to that point. I wanted, you know, I didn't know quite what shape it was going to take, but I didn't, in other words, want somebody to come and clone Lou, basically. You know, we weren't looking to just carry this on as a, oh, let's, you know, do this to death and kind of thing. This was, the decision to carry on with the band was a real challenge, you know, and it really needed somebody that could live up to that challenge. And I just had a hunch somehow that Johnny would, you know. And and this last year, you know, I mean, first of all, we had to spend a little time getting to know each other, you know, but the moment we played together with the band, everybody sort of had this funny smile on their face to say, you know, trying to contain it, but it was a lot of excitement, and it just naturally sort of felt good, you know, just very special. Yeah, it was, I mean, you know, I think about that period often, that, you know, it was nothing that, I mean, I think probably the strength of, you know, I Want to Know What Love Is was such an overwhelming song that it sort of eclipsed most of the rest of the album. Maybe the rest of the album didn't live up to that. Had it been, you know, as strong as perhaps the Four album, you know, in the rock direction, it may have, you know, that may have been a different story, you know, but it did take a lot of the spotlight, that song, and just an extended phase I was going through. Yeah, I do. I mean, I know that is the case, I guess. And as I say, you know, there's nothing you can really do very much about things. When you know, it's a natural, we went through that phase, I guess. It was a sort of frustrating to all of us at one point when we realized that, you know, it sort of crept up on us a bit. Yeah, and I guess that was sort of the beginnings of when we realized that maybe we'd exhausted that relationship a bit. You know, Lou and I were sort of, you know, our relationship was deteriorating a bit, I guess, after that. And, you know, we were getting diversified a bit. Lou, you know, started to become quite preoccupied with his solo career. And it sort of, I think the focus went a bit, you know, just in the midst of, you know, coming up with a song like Wanna Know What Love Is, which was, certainly an event for us. We kind of, funnily enough, after that, things started to sort of drift a bit, you know. And I think there's a lot of frustration around, and it gradually got worse. And, it is now, you know, looking at what we've just achieved with this album, it's sort of, my God, it's like, where were we, you know, kind of thing, because I think we've really come back, you know, very much to where we, I think we probably should have, you know, carried on after the Four album. And to me, it's got the essence of that sort of excitement again, you know, which, you know, I guess maybe it's to do with, you know, the amount of time you can spend with somebody in that way, you know, and still maintain a freshness. Maybe this was, you know, although it was at the beginning, it was, you know, we went through a pretty tricky period at one point, and when nobody quite knew what was going to happen. But, you know, coming out of that period and having had the experience of the last year and sort of almost, rediscovering that excitement again, it's sort of, it makes me sort of proud of the fact that we were able to, you know, survive through it and then come out and come back rocking. And Johnny's had a lot to do with that, you know. I mean, it's obviously a, you know.
I think it's easy for people to sit around and pick out certain songs on the last two albums and say that that was a trend that Foreigner was focusing on. But if you look at all the albums, there's always been a pretty wide range of material on each one. Different moods, different tempos. And with the Four album, it was a change for a rock band to actually promote a beautiful ballad type song, Waiting for a Girl Like You. After that happened, now it's like mandatory for a hard rock band to have their second single be a power ballad.
What we were doing is, I think what Johnny was saying is, like, we didn't treat that song in any particularly different way than we had treated any of the other ballads on any of the other albums. You know, it's just that, you know, I guess that's the first big ballad we hit that we had, you know, and it was, I mean, I didn't know that that was necessarily going to be a single even at the point when we recorded it. We weren't sort of saying, oh, we've got to do a ballad kind of thing. You know, it was just part of the makeup of our albums. And it obviously is. It's different, you know, I mean, or as I was saying in our earlier words about the first albums, you know, I started playing keyboards or piano basically at the same time, you know, as I was putting the band together. Something I'd always potted around on, but I guess gradually I got a little better at it, and I was starting to have a problem with the fact that I was perhaps favoring keyboard writing over guitar writing, and I was sort of getting a bit far away from the guitar, perhaps, to the point where, you know, I'd desperately try and put guitar on a song like I Want to Know What Love Is, but I couldn't really fit a guitar onto it, you know. So then I realized that I'd written a keyboard song, you know. So yeah, there's definitely a difference in approach, you know. I guess it did.
It did. Yeah. Heavy bands got heavier. Commercial bands got more commercial. You lost the middle ground. I think you went through a phase where if you had keyboards in a band, then you couldn't be in favor with what I call rivet heads. You know, people that like Motorhead and Metallica. You know, heavy metal took on a really dark, deep, very heavy audience. Now you've got a style that's come back in fashion where guys aren't using tremolo bars. They're not trying to play real fast like Eddie Van Halen, who's great, by the way. But you've got people more like, well, Guns N' Roses is an example of people that just use more rhythm guitars, riff-oriented, stuff with less flashy lead parts that are more like the original guitar rock of the 70s. So it's kind a lot of
things
more fun.
It's like a wheel, you know, trends that come and go. But I'm glad, you know, that through all that extreme, perhaps, period of the 80s, you know, when things were extreme and there was no middle ground, basically, it was either, you know, whoever thought that heavy metal was going to come back, you know. I mean, at that point, but that was extreme, you know, and there was no, you know, there was no real, you know, hard rock sort of disappeared, you know, like hard rock as we kind of knew it. And I'm just glad that people are kind of really seriously rediscovering, you know, that, you know, hard rock can exist and songs can be written too, you know. And there's, you know, there's a whole thing in there. That's why I think it seems to be getting healthier, the climate, you know. A lot of interesting new bands coming out, and yeah, you know, I'm not saying pompous sort of melodies or all that, you know, but songs, you know, real songs are coming out, you know, with, yeah, kind of, yeah, that's it. A song. Yeah, but your sense of like real, you know, there's some valid stuff coming out now that's really, and I think people are responding to it, you know. Well, in the cases you mentioned, you know, Ready for the Rain was the song that I originally heard. Johnny, it's basically his song, which we sort of messed around with and modified a little bit and added to a little bit.
I brought that one with me, yeah.
That's the song that sold me on Johnny's voice originally. And I felt very strongly about that song, and, you know, it's on the album. But it's, you know, that, and then the next song, When the Night Comes Down, which I don't think is ballad particularly, but it's like, you know, it's a different sounding song, yeah.
Yeah, it's a question of tempos more than lyrical direction. Mm.
It's just...
If you don't have songs like that on a record that are varied tempos, then the rockers don't have near as much impact, because everyone is going to be a similar hard-driving type song, and you can split them up, one rocker, one slow, one fast, or you can put it into an order that I really like about this album, where, because you've got a whole section there of songs that are sit down and listen. One has a couple of them actually have a bit of a message, but more than just relationship between man and woman. And I find that very interesting.
Low down and dirty.
Yeah.
We mean business. No, this is not.
It would have been easy to just record, you know, a couple of nice, pretty songs and throw them out there and let people go ahead and continue to think that Foreigner had drifted off into the adult contemporary mode and probably sell quite a few records. Sure, but we thought it'd be a lot more fun to let people remember that Foreigner was a great rock band and still is, and put that message out first. I mean, I can't expect Low Down and Dirty to be an easy listening hit on an adult contemporary radio. We'd be foolish to think that, but we can make a really good rock statement with that and let people know that we're back and ready to rock in a very hard fashion. All right.
Yeah.
I love listening to people's choices. We have our own ideas about stuff, and then you send it out, everyone has their own, and I think it's really interesting.
Okay.
We won't.
Yeah, we're starting in early August, actually.
Nashville.
I believe we're starting in Nashville, yeah. 2nd or 3rd of August, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the first time that we've toured in several years. And, you know, the whole thing was done, you know, basically, it's been a bit frustrating, particularly on the last album when we didn't tour. That was kind of a very frustrating situation for us. And, you know, there's a lot of pent-up stuff in there that we have to go and get out, I guess. You know, I'm really kind of looking forward to doing that.
Well, I look at it like this. I went to a bar the other night, and there was a band playing there. And it was kind of boring, you know, and all of a sudden they played a familiar song, and the guitarist called up this guy out of the audience that happened to know the song and just sang it just great. And it was the most intense moment of the whole night. It was. And I kind of look at this the same way. I mean, I can be like just the average guy that jumped out of the crowd and just is up there singing these songs. And I really feel confident that I can do them in a very convincing way.
I just heard that. We got it on tape.
But I think it'd be a lot of fun for the audience to think of it that way.
What do you mean? Maybe we'll do that on the first gig. You know, three of us will go out on stage and...
But I think an audience might pick up on that because...
Yeah, it would.
I'll be down there waving my hands about, call me.
Interesting concept.
That's the way I look at it. I think people will pick up on it, you know, just the
we've the only time we've sort of played in public was in a blues bar, and if that's anything to go by, just you know, doing half an hour, I guess. There was more excitement there than we'd had in a long time. You know, it was, you know, it's almost like at this point, I mean, we've been together, we've known each other for just about a year now. It feels like a little longer than that, you know. It feels like
100, doesn't it? Jeez.
But, you know, there's definitely a, I'd say, a, you know, I'd even go as far as to say that I don't think the band has ever felt so much like a band, you know. Really is a very special feeling. And I think, you know, that confidence is just some inner confidence in us that we feel, unless we really do something drastically wrong, we're going to have a lot of fun out there. You know, we're going to, yeah.
Such an old ham.
Said I'm such an old ham.
Very nice to meet you. Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you're in Dallas now, right? You in Dallas, Redbeard? You're in Dallas, aren't you? Yeah. Well, we might be down that way soon. Maybe we'll...
we'll do it in Dallas.
We'll do it for you. How about if we pulled you out of the crowd? A whole new career. Okay. Yeah, nice talking to you, man. See you soon.
See ya.